This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And this half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Bill Larson is going to be here. He's our own personal legal eagle here at Joy on Paper, and he's going to be here next month. You can go to my website, and there's a form you can fill in if you have a question, anything about your intellectual properties. He will be happy to answer it. And one of the things he's going to be talking about is somebody actually wants to copyright a word. And so we're going to hear from Bill about whether or not she can do that. And at the bottom of the hour, my guest is Anne Colley, and we're going to be talking to her about her book, The Odyssey and Dr. Novak. So I'm really looking forward to talking to her. But meanwhile, I'm turning to a guest here I have in the studio, and I'm so happy to have him. I've been having so much fun just talking to him and listening to some of his stories. He's an Irishman, so what else would you expect from an Irishman? Wonderful stories. Joe Callahan. Hi, Joe. It's so nice to have you here in the studio.
Thank you, Patsy. It's a delight to be here. Thank you.
Okay, well, Joe has written 17 books, and in a variety of styles, and we're going to be talking about them. The latest one, and it's quite an amazing story that he's telling here, The Testimony of a Miracle Man, and it talks about some of his overcoming health problems, and we're going to be talking about that, and we're also going to be talking about some of his other books, because he's just given me one that I really love this book, and Joe was in the Navy, and so we're going to be talking about that in time here for Memorial Day. But Joe, tell us about the latest book, your 17th book. It's always exciting to have a new book out, and tell us about this Miracle Man book.
Well, I've really been blessed because ever since June of 2013, when I went to the VA and they kept me there for 4 days, did PET scan and CAT scan, they discovered I had numerous tumors on my liver. And they sent me to see the head oncologist who made the pronouncement of that to me. He said, what we're going to do is we'll take a biopsy and then we'll know what kind of chemo we want to use to treat it. And I said, no, you won't. And he said, I just told you have cancer. Do you know what that means? I said, yes, I do. He said, what do you plan on doing, just die? And I said, no, I plan on living. And he said, well, what are you going to do about it? I said, I'm going to do the best thing that I can possibly do. I said, I'm a born-again Christian. My body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. And as such, I have the right to approach my Father in his throne room and make my petitions known to him. And I said, I'm going to ask him to heal me, because I believe he still has work for me to do. Well, this doctor said, well, if you change your mind, here's my phone number and I'll set you up. I never did call him back, but as I was leaving, he said, good luck. I said, luck doesn't have anything to do with it. It's called faith. Well, when you're given a verdict of cancer, you want to get a second opinion. So I got an outside doctor, Dr. Miguel Tana, and I went to his office, and Dr. Bowser, who was working for him, sent me out to get x-rays, and he showed me on his smartphone. The x-rays came back. They'd taken about 20 x-rays, head to toe, front and back, side to side. They couldn't find a single tumor anywhere on my body. However, they now discovered, this is in like middle of 2014, they discovered I now had multiple myeloma, which is a form of bone cancer. And I said, oh, great. So they sent me to their oncologist, and a very nice man. But they'd already known, don't suggest chemo, because I'm going to turn it down. So this doctor kind of fibbed to me, and he told me that there's this new drug on the market. You take it intravenously. It only goes after the myeloma. It doesn't do any harm to any innocent tissue. Come in twice a week, and we'll give it to you intravenously. And you like to trust your doctor, but you don't want to be naive or stupid. So I said, how do you pronounce that? And he said, I'll write it down for you. So he wrote it down on the piece of paper. So I had the spelling. As soon as I got home, I got on the computer, looked it up. I found out it was just another form of chemo, and it had a two-year life expectancy. This is in August of 2014. It had a two-year life expectancy, and then also the wonderful side effects were possible blindness, heart attack, stroke, kidney failure. I said, who needs that? So the next time I was due to see him, I was due to start treatment. I came in and I said, Doctor, I changed my mind about that terrific chemo treatment you have for me. I'd rather trust in God. I said, he's already removed the tumors that were on my liver, so I'd rather trust in him to take care of this. He said, I understand where you're coming from. I'm a believer too. You got to understand that God's the one who gives man the ability to come up with these wonderful drugs. And I said, oh, really? And I said, did you see the terrific side effects? Heart attack, blindness, stroke, kidney failure, make the rest of your life a living hell. If God's in it, he doesn't do things like that. I said, God doesn't play silly games like that. And so he said, well, here's what's the deal. He said, if you don't take the chemo, this is August of 2014, I don't believe you'll be around to see 2015. First, you're going to become very confused. You're going to become very weak. And then lastly, you'll be dead and in a short amount of time. So I said, well, that's what you say. Let's see what God has to say. So I didn't take it. And as I was doing my book and preparing for it, I went and got all the reports from the doctors, both the VA, my outside doctor, the oncologist at the VA, the outside oncologist, and I have reports in my book showing, because I know there's always a skeptic to say, you can say anything. I say, sure, but look what the doctor said. Look what the test said. You know, it's in the book. Prove it. So as they were printing up a copy of my report, and I'm waiting for it, I saw the doctor go by, and he went and sat down in his office. He put it on the phone. Didn't look like he was busy. So I tapped on the doorway, and I said, hello, doctor. I said, I don't know if you remember me or not. I'm Joe Callahan. I'm the guy that turned down your wonderful chemo because of those terrific side effects. He said, oh, yes, I remember you. And I felt like a beauty queen. There's not a drop of effeminate blood in my body, but I twirled around in front of him. And I said, look at this. And I twirled around in a circle, and I said, do I look like I don't have any energy? And I said, and another thing, I'm not delusional. I'm just Irish. And I said, lastly, I think you'll agree with me. I'm definitely not dead. Well, he looks at me. He says, well, you know, Joe, God could still change his mind and bring it back on you. And I said, well, maybe the powerless, dumb, religious God, the man upstairs, would play a silly game like that. But my God is my Father. He's God Almighty, and his love for me is perfect, and he doesn't play games like that. When he heals you, you're healed. That's in August of 2014. You know, it'll be 4 years now. But the time I went back to see him in August of 2016, I went back to see him. Remember, it had only a two-year life expectancy. And the time I went back to see him, I'd already gone past that, you know. And this goes to show that faith in the true God is real, and it can move mountains.
And I think it's so wonderful that you want to share your story. And, of course, as I mentioned, you've written some books in the past that also have a spiritual connotation, because this is a subject that's meant a great deal to you. Now, I'm so happy that, you know, so you were in the process of all having, you know, to overcome all of these diseases. And while you're doing it, you're writing a book, that's inspirational in itself. You know, so many people, they will say to me, well, I don't know when I'm going to write a book. I don't know how I'm going to write a book. I can't find time to write a book. And I said, okay, well, you know, and then here is Joe. He's got all sorts of problems, but he sits down and writes.
I write usually in the middle of the night. There's no TV blurring. There's no noise. And it's quiet. And then I hear from the Holy Spirit what to write. Now, this is from true life experiences. It's just taking what's happened in my life and sharing it with people, and being honest with
them. You know, one of the wonderful things that I love books that people write, at the bottom of the hour, I have a woman who's going to be talking about, she wrote a memoir about her time in Europe. And so I love stories that preserve information that we wouldn't, that, you know, you live your life and so many things happen, and if you don't write it down, it's lost. But it's wonderful when people share these stories And in your case, of course, your stories are also inspirational because you give hope to people and you know, try to get them on the right path of the way to think positively, which you certainly do. I mean, you're like a very positive person.
Well, it's a matter of faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Well, God wants all of his children to be able to please him, so it tells us in his word that to everyone is given a measure of faith. But it also says, with what measure you measure, that's how it shall be measured unto you. And when your faith is put to the test, the more you show God it's important in your life, it's not just something you hang on a wall, and the more you rely on that faith, then the more faith he can entrust with you. Your faith grows stronger in him, and it's about relationship with him, not religion. Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden never had religion with God. They knew him as their father, and to him, he was the son and daughter he'd created in his image.
Now, one of the books that I just finished reading it, is Journey Toward Eternity, which you wrote a while back. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a very moving story.
Thank you.
And can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Well, you know, as we go through life, we're given two different paths. One of them is narrow and one is wide. And the path to destruction is wide. And the only safe path to be on is the one that's narrow. Now, when I wrote the book, it was to inform people that every day we need to make decisions. Which path are we going to travel on? We have the free will to do that. You know, we wouldn't be made in God's image if he made us robots. He didn't take away our free will to either love him or reject him, to follow his ways or to follow Satan's ways. And so we have that free will, and this book is about making sure that we exercise that free will by staying on the path that will lead us to eternity in heaven and not eternity in hell.
Well, I mentioned to you that when I was looking at the book on Amazon, and this is one of the things that, for all of you writers out there, I do love books that have interesting covers. And I mentioned to you that I like very much the cover of Journey, Journey Toward Eternity, because it does have a cover that is meaningful. Can you explain that?
Yes. When I do my books, especially the spiritual books, I also do secular books, but in the spiritual books, I receive most of the information from the Holy Spirit. When I get done, I say, what does the cover look like? And he shows me in my mind's eye what the cover looks like. The cover has two roads looking exactly alike. Only one of them looks like it's paved with gold. However, it's only fool's gold. It glitters like gold, but it's valueless. It's worthless. And then also everything in it is darkness. The plants, the flowers, the trees are all dead. There's nothing but darkness. The other road is bright. And it's when I first sent them to the digital artist that I was working with, the artist came back and made both of them the same width. And I said, oh, no, that won't do, because my fellow Christians will jump all over me because one of these paths is supposed to be narrow. So I asked the Holy Spirit, how can I make this path narrow? He reminded me that Jesus said those who would come after him must daily decide to take up their cross and follow him. So I lined it on both sides with crucifixes. And the cross is not a tragic event. The religion that God delivered me from used to say, oh, we all have our cross to bear, as if God put something tragic on you. That's a lie. The cross, Jesus said, you have the choice. Take up the cross and follow him, or say it's too heavy. The cross is simply to make a sacrifice of love. That's what the cross represents. But anyway, I aligned that with crosses. All the plants and flowers are alive. Everything is bright. And the narrow path is really the only safe path, the only path that's worth spending your time traveling on. Reject the wide path. It's full with fool's gold, and why go after that? It has no value to your life at all.
Well, as I said, I enjoyed reading the book, and we do need, in this time where the world seems like it's crazy, and there are so many awful things going on, and so many, sometimes we see so much evil in the world, that it is good to be able to step back and to read a book, either you know, that makes us feel as if there's hope, and if we think about it and we take that right path, life can be so much so beautiful.
That's what it's about. We're not put here on earth just to piddle around and waste our time. And God gives us a gift of faith so that we can know the one true God and not any of man's imagination or Satan's deception. And when we spend our life being guided by the one true God, we have an abundant life. And it's not an abundance of wealth, not the biggest house, the biggest fanciest car. It's an abundance of peace that passes understanding. When you're told you have cancer and you're dying in 2 weeks, and you say, well, let's see what God says about that, you have peace. You can have joy unspeakable and full of glory when everybody else is losing their head. You're getting fired. You're losing your job. You don't know where your next income's coming from. And you say, well, praise God, I can trust in him. I'm his child, and his love for me is perfect. He'll provide an even better job. And you can have joy that passes understanding. And you can have righteousness. You can live rightly in God's sight because you're covered by the blood of Jesus. That's the only path to be on. That's the only way to live your life, because this life is only a temporary thing. It's only a temporary existence. We're spiritual beings experiencing a temporary.
And while we're here, we should enjoy it. Be good to each other.
There's nothing like having an abundance of joy and peace.
Exactly.
The world's going to try to take it away from you. Satan wants to take it away from you, but he can't do it as long as you understand that your Father's love for you is perfect and your Father is real, and no one loves you like he does.
And so, you know, one of the things, why I call this show Joy on Paper, is that there's so much joy that a person gets from writing, and Joe has found that in 17 books. We're going to talk about one of his secular books in a minute, because he puts that down in paper. He enjoys the process of sharing his joy. And so whether you're a reader or whether you're a writer, it's just, books are so important. And I always want to encourage everyone, you know, write your story if you can. And if not, at least, you know, read a lot. Read other people's books and share that joy. You can go to the library. You can go on Amazon and get books on Kindle. Joe's books, Joe Callahan, his books are available on Amazon or wherever books are sold online, right? Barnes & Noble. And the newest one is Testimony of a Miracle Man. And I think people will find inspiration in that. And do have a look at Journey Toward Eternity, because one, the book is great, and I love the cover. But let's talk a little bit about, I have some time here, let's talk a little bit about your background, because I also like this book that he's written. It's called Adventures in Navyland. And let's just say you were not born to be in the Navy, were you?
Well, that's one of the things I put in the book. I don't know if the Navy was ready for someone like me. My background is, I'm an Irish Kentuckian.
Uh-huh. Not a lot of Navy there.
No, but my parents were divorced, and I was raised by my grandparents on my mother's side. Neither one of my young parents wanted to be tied down with a kid. My grandparents said, we'll raise him. So they actually became my mother and father. And I was brought up on good pioneer-type principles. Don't expect somebody else to do your fighting for you. If you have rights, you stand up for them. Don't expect somebody else to have to do it for you. And I was taught, never, ever be a bully. But if somebody's dumb enough to pick a fight with you, don't walk away until you find out who won. This kept me from having to fight a lot of bullies, because once you tell them, you know, do you realize you're asking me to hurt you, maybe hurt you seriously? They go, wait a minute, I didn't think that you were going to hurt me. I didn't want that to happen. I thought I was going to step all over you. And they back away. They run away. They apologize. You know, it's fun to watch the way the bullies behave when you let them know there's pain involved for you if you won't think you're going to treat me like that and just get away with it. Well, as a result, I wound up in the Navy and some of their rules and regulations, and I would occasionally clash. Especially, I had this one lieutenant that I had a terrible problem with. He and I almost had World War III together. But it is a fun book. It shows my Irish wit, which, thank God I was born Irish. It's a gift that he gives to Irishmen. I can take really dangerous things and turn them into funny stories, you know, the way I handled it. But
I love the suggestions on how to overcome seasickness, because It's happened to me. So I love when people suggest things like that. What does somebody suggest that you do?
See, that's been a while.
Yeah.
So I know one guy said, go down and eat some burnt toast.
Yeah,
and
burnt
toast. The last thing you want is food. And I thought, ugh.
I was in a position once where I was getting seasick, and people were giving me all these ideas, eat this and eat this. And I thought, are you crazy? I'm dying.
Well, the fun part about that story is I got my revenge because this was my first trip out on a ship. I'd never been on a ship before in my life. When we left Key West, we were going down to Guantanamo, Cuba, and the water was mirror calm. And I'm hanging over the ship going, and all these people are coming up. What's the matter? Can't handle it. I got what you call sea legs. And by the time we got to the Windward Passage, which is at the bottom half of Cuba before you're heading into Guantanamo, we hit a heavy storm. The ship was listing 45 degrees back and forth. And all these old salts that were coming up to me saying, what's the matter? You know, can't handle, you know. They were throwing up all over the place. And by that time, I was so used to the motion of the ship, I go, what's the matter? Go get some burnt toast and eat it. You know, so I got my revenge.
Okay, well, Joe, I think you're delightful, and it's as a matter of fact. Now you mentioned he has written "Dirty Joe," which is in
Adventures of Dirty Joe Callahan.
Okay,
and I have a sequel to it.
These are short novella type of thing.
They're true stories of my career in retail sales.
Well, if you put it all together, and we have a new book called "Dirty Joe Callahan," because the stories are funny, and I love the way you tell stories, and he had me laughing here before the show, and if he puts together a new book, will you come back?
Definitely, I would be most honored to.
Okay, well, I would just love to have you back, Joe, because I think it's fun to talk to you, and I hope that all of my listeners will remember Joe is a vet, and veterans, you know, we are honoring them this coming weekend, Memorial Day, and we want to thank all vets. Did you have something?
Yes, Patsy, I just think maybe I better mention real quick because I'm of Irish and German background, and my name is spelled C-A-L-L-I-H-A instead of A. Most of them spelled with an A.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's good that you mentioned it. C-A-L-L-I-H-A-N. Okay, good. So, and people can find your books online and do get them, and you can go to my website, and I will have links there tomorrow. I'll have it up so that people can also go to my website, radio-joyonpaper, and I will have the links to Joe's books there. Okay, Joe, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to have a commercial break, and then I'll be back and talking to Ann Colley.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543. 871-1543.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Anne C. Colley, and we're going to be talking about her book, The Odyssey and Dr. Novak, a memoir. Hi, Anne.
Yes, hello, Patsy.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I really enjoyed this book, and I think it's such a relevant book at this time because everybody is... talking about Russia, and everybody's talking about the Ukraine, and of course Poland. So we're going to be able to talk to you about what inspired you to write this book. But I do want to also say that I'm always happy to talk to somebody from England, because I, when I was young, I'm from Northern Michigan. I read Jane Austen, and and all I wanted to do was move to England. And as soon as I had enough money, I bought a 400-year-old cottage in Sanning.
In where?
Sanning.
How wonderful!
Just outside of Henley, and it was, you know, one of these 400-year-old cottages that had dry rot and wet rot,
of course.
And it had all sorts of rot. And I spent a lot of time getting it in good shape, but it was a wonderful time of my life when I lived in England. So I'm
lovely. Good to see you.
Yes. Well, I was inspired. I wanted to live not too far from where Jane Austen was. Spent her childhood. So it was really quite marvelous.
Well, I'm very proud of you for doing that.
Now, of course, you've been out of England for quite a while. I do want to say that, this book was inspired when you were still in England. You left how old were you when you left England for America?
I was 13 years old,
Okay, so the story is fascinating. You cover so many things in this story, but the basic idea is that you met somebody as a child who inspired you to really think about another place and time. And so tell us a little bit about your meeting with Dr. Novak, what it meant to you, and then let's talk about what you did in Poland and the Ukraine. Because, you know, I think that most Americans are not even... half of them aren't sure where all these countries are. And it is important at this time that we understand these countries better. And I think you can give us some insight.
Well, thank you. Well, I was born in 1940, more or less at the beginning of the Second World War. And as you said, I was living in England. More specifically, I was living just outside of Manchester in northern part of England, which was quite heavily bombed. So I have memories of that. But this book comes from several moments in that childhood, specifically in 1946, after the end of the war, when Dr. Novak, the head of the Unitarian movement in Czechoslovakia, came over to see my father, who was a Unitarian minister. I think, but as I say in the book, what does a child of six know? I think it was to talk about post-war recovery in Czechoslovakia, because the Unitarian movement was very much involved in helping refugees, etc. So he came to visit, and that visit was somehow magical. On the cover of the book, I have a picture of Dr. Novak holding my six-year-old hand. And that photograph, I think, captures the magic of that moment. I felt a great empathy with him. And so that memory, that occasion, became sort of a seed for my growing up. And that seed was nourished by a person whom I called my second mother. I think we all often have a second mother. Her name was Mrs. Rowe. She lived not far from us, but she took a particular interest in refugees from Czechoslovakia and encouraged them, sent letters to people who were wanting to get out. And those who moved in the area, she paid a lot of attention to. So I spent a lot of time with her, and she sort of encouraged my interest in all of this. So that was the beginning. And there were other refugees I got to know and who came to visit us to talk about post-war recovery. So that was the very beginning. And if I may go on, it stayed with me. I was sent to a boarding school in London. And during that time, I became even more aware of what was going on or what had taken place. So, strangely enough, when I got married many years later, my honeymoon was actually in Czechoslovakia. I wanted to go back and take a look at it for myself. And I happened to return just 1 year in 1969, 1 year after the Russians had come in and invaded Prague and taken back what had hoped they would have some independence, but the Czechs lost it to the Russian presence, and there was a lot of courageous opposition to the Russians. So I was there when it was still sort of the leftovers of that invasion. People were frightened. The street names had been taken down by the local population to try and confuse the Russians who came. That sort of thing. So it was a very poignant thing. The result is that both Central and Eastern Europe remained in my consciousness, so that later in my life, when I had an opportunity to teach abroad on a Fulbright, I chose to go to countries in Central and Eastern Europe.
Now, I do want to talk about that, because for Americans, so many Americans have roots in these countries, but know very little about what is actually happening. So you went at a specific time. For example, let's talk a little bit about Poland. I happened to be in Poland for one of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising anniversaries. So I saw Warsaw, and I saw Poland. I saw the results of the Russian occupation of Poland was just unbelievable, the damage that was done by that occupation.
Right.
And so when I was there, it was just the beginning of where the Poles were starting to, well, we almost have to say Americanize, because when we got there, it was late at night. There weren't many places open, but there was a Pizza Hut. You know? And it was so funny that you go all the way to Poland, can't find anything open, but there are already
a Pizza Hut.
There was a Pizza Hut because they wanted to grab, you know, a modernization. They wanted to change from that horrible drab period of a Russian occupation.
And may I ask what year it was you were there?
So this would have been 84.
So before I was there.
You saw the changes. How long were you there in Poland? You were there starting
for 85? I was there about 10 years after you were. I was there in 1995. And I was there for the full year living in Warsaw. So I was there at a time when the sort of the Pizza Hut mentality was becoming more active. It was a time a few years after the end, the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991. So there was a great push in Poland then to try and become more westernized, what your Pizza Hut had already anticipated. So there were beginnings of big corporate buildings. There was a big push to become members of the European Union and a lot of interest in Western culture as well. I remember seeing Marlboro cigarette ads everywhere with a cowboy, looming over Poland. And academically, too, there was a great interest in American literature at this point.
Your job was, you were teaching American lit.
That's right, I was. I was part of the University of Warsaw. It was called the Institute of English Studies, and it taught literature. And I was there to fill in gaps in their American literature program. And specifically, they were interested in my teaching African-American literature. That fascinated me, that they wanted that. So I did teach several courses on African-American literature. I also did a big survey course on American literature and some seminars on transcendentalism.
Now, so what did you find the Polish people, their favorite author, American author, was?
Oh, dear, I don't know. that's a good question. I don't remember, but I remember a lot of people loved American poetry. And, I'm trying to think, but what one has to realize is that even though these people were perhaps not entirely, their libraries were slightly inadequate, but they bought books on their, privately. And these academics were so bright, so brilliant, and so interested that on their own they would study and were well informed about American literature.
Now, of course, that was in Poland, and we saw the results of the Russian occupation there. Now, that was under the Fulbright, and you later went to Kiev, correct?
Correct. And, you talked earlier in your question to me, you remarked on the fact that many people are not as aware of Ukrainian culture, particularly those who do not have roots in Ukrainian culture. So when I first received my assignment from the Fulbright organization, I learned through a letter that I was to go to Kyiv, K-Y-I-V. And to be honest, I wasn't sure exactly what that city was, because I was not familiar with the spelling of K-I-E-W, Kyiv. So I didn't realize, I had to go and ask somebody, what is K-Y-I-V? I didn't realize it was Kiev, and what a fortunate circumstance or choice that was, because I got to live in the capital of Ukraine, one of the most beautiful cities I have ever seen.
And it's funny, because of the things in the news, we're hearing a great deal about Russian connections and deals with Ukrainians. And so when I'm talking to people, I will, say, do you know why were all the lobbyists in Washington dealing with the Ukrainians? And it's really rather amusing when you think of what has all of the different nationalities, all of the different groups of people who have been centered in Ukraine, fighting around the Ukraine, near the Ukraine, all the way, going all the way back to the Mongols. That Ukraine should play such a very, very important role in current history.
Well, it certainly does, and I don't know how if many people are aware of this fact, but Ukraine is the largest country in Europe in terms of land area. I don't think people realize.
No,
that.
I don't think.
And it's crucial because before Crimea was taken back by the Russians, it had access to the Baltic Sea. It was possible the gas line run through Ukraine. It has many
natural resources. I mean, everybody from you know, the Germans, the Austrians, the Russians, the Mongols, everybody's been fighting over this area because
it is
very rich. And at one point, the Ukraine was really the breadbasket of Europe,
the
world.
It was, of the world.
And, of course, the loss of Crimea, because the Russians wanted it, it is something that has caused, in many ways, all of these problems, so many of the problems we have in the world right now with Russia and Europe, because everybody wanted a piece of the Ukraine.
That's right. And as you know, from both visiting Poland and your knowledge of Ukraine, the borders are forever shifting. So, for instance, on the western part of Ukraine, Lviv or Lvov or Lemberg, whatever you want to call it, which is now part of Ukraine, was formerly part of Poland. So you have very sort of mixed populations of people with various loyalties and histories. And then in Poland, on the western part of Poland, parts of Poland once belonged to Germany. And now Germany is investing in those cities on the western part of Poland. So the borders are forever shifting. And Lviv itself was once part of the Austro Empire. So, you know.
So you got to see some very, very important parts of the world. And meanwhile, you always in the back of your mind is Dr. Novak. And the reason you named your book The Odyssey and Dr. Novak is because essentially you've been on a search for him, right?
Not so much for him, but for
some understanding of the area where he came from.
Correct. I would say that the book is called The Odyssey because it's about my journey, but a journey initiated by my meeting Dr. Novak when I was 6.
Isn't it wonderful that one person can have such an impact?
Well, it is quite wonderful, and I think most of us could look back on our lives and think about someone who influenced the direction of our lives. Yeah.
In a way, as one is reading this book, one thinks, gee, am I the type of person who could make an impact on a child? Could I, just the very being, now he gave you a gift, and he gave you a book, right? And sometimes it's a little thing like that that can change a child's life. They start looking at things differently, or in my case, I get a book by Jane Austen, and everything changes your how you see the world. I read Jane Austen as a child, and I want to go to England. Now, nobody in the Northern Peninsula of Michigan ever was dreaming about going to England. It was just not done. Nobody ever thought about it. But a little thing like that. So it's nice to think that we have this potential in us to make an impact.
Yeah. And yeah. Although we don't do it consciously, it sort of happens. It has to be received by somebody. So you can't, anticipate how someone you're around is going to react. But it does happen through those very small, for some part, unremembered parts of life.
Exactly. And it's sort of one wants to feel that one is worthy of being impactful. You think, well, Dr. Right. Novak was, he had a specialness about him that you almost want to say, oh, I hope I can be special just at the right time for somebody.
Right. And I would say it was reinforced by the person I talked about initially, Mrs. Rowe, who took such an active interest in Czech refugees. Yes, and what your comment reminds me of what it is like to write a memoir. A memoir comes to life through those small details that otherwise might just pass by you, but they really add the flavor to experience and to a life and create its richness.
Well, you've had so many very fascinating experiences, and not just in Eastern Europe. You've done a lot of traveling, and I will say that you are a very observant person. You really make the places that you visited come alive, and so this is a wonderful thing that to be able to share these stories, to be able to keep memories of events alive for future generations is so important.
I think so. I'm someone who really engages the past and engages the future, but I don't want to forget the past either. They all sort of interact with one another. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about some of your travels, because I found it fascinating. You've been to so many places.
You mean other than what I write about in the memoir?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, I've been very fortunate to have been with someone who has loved to travel. And I have to say, I didn't start to travel in earnest until I was about 40 years old, and then it really began. And when I have traveled, it's not ever been with a guided tour. It's always been, just our making our own way. And I think that exposes one to experiences that are a bit more meaningful. One is not protected so much. So one is a little bit more vulnerable, yet the experience ends up being more rich. I have traveled throughout all of South America and have been to places where perhaps one wouldn't choose to go now, like to Venezuela. The difficulties the people in Venezuela are experiencing now. But I have been twice to Venezuela, to Bolivia. That was probably one of the most, I would say, exotic places I have been, to Chile, to Peru, to Ecuador. Let me see.
Well, it's so exciting to be able to travel and to do things spontaneously, because sometimes it is, if you are
That's
too
right.
programmed and you are on a tour
right.
and you're doing something at 10:10 and then something at 11:35 and something at 2:15, you have no chance really to get out there and get sometimes involved in little mishaps and little
exactly.
problems. And so often,
and also you're surrounded by people like yourself, whereas if you travel alone, you are forced, if I may say so, to interact with people who are, who live in the place.
Well, I think
I also traveled in Brazil. I forgot Brazil. That was very important.
Oh, that's an exciting place. Well,
and I've been to Africa and, you know, throughout Canada. Let's see where else.
So, you know, as a writer, as somebody who writes, I think it's wonderful if when people are traveling and when they get back, if they sit down and write their stories and preserve them more than we need more than the little snippets on Facebook. I think people really should take that time and write these stories out. Don't you?
Well, you said just the right thing, because one thing I did after I came back from travel, before I would even unpack, I would go up to my office, which was in my attic, and write a long travel essay about what I had seen, what I had done, what I had felt, etc. And those letters became very precious, because they hold on, they preserve the details, the particulars that otherwise slip away with time. One remembers the general outline, but the small things that do make a difference to experience would otherwise disappear.
Well, I just want to thank you for being on the program today, Anne. The name of the book is The Odyssey and Dr. Novak, a memoir. It's by Anne C. Colley. I pronounce that right?
Yes, you're very good.
Okay, and it's spelled Colley, and the book is available wherever books are sold. Do you have a website?
I have a webpage, yes.
Yeah.
May I give it?
Yes, please.
It's ANN-C-COLLEY.com.
Okay, well,
I'm very proud of the webpage.
Okay, well, everybody go there, because you have photos there and people can learn more about you, and I think they will enjoy this book, and it's a good example of a well-written memoir.
Well, thank you very much, Patsy.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks for being on the program. It's been a joy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, whoa. You have to read this book simply to find out where all these places are, in case you don't know where they are, because they're all over the news right now. Okay, well, I want to thank everybody. This time just went fast. So remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or to see them maybe in a movie or on television someday. So all you have to do is start writing. Make sure that you have a great Memorial Day weekend. Be safe out there and just have fun, and remember our vets and do something for them. Remember, USO can always use donations. And meanwhile, I'm going to salute Ed and say thank you, Ed, and he's saluting me because I should have been in the military, because I love being saluted. So bye-bye for now. Have a great, great weekend. Bye.